Them say life is sweeter than, but you for take it easy and make you know the rush and blow your.
You are listening to the BBC World Service. I'm April Holmes. I'm a sprinter from the United States, and I have won gold at the Paralympic Games. London 2012 was my third time representing my country at the Paralympics. For all the talk of legacy, more than half the countries who sent a team didn't win anything at all. In fact, some are still waiting to win their very first Paralympic medal, like Ghana. I've come to Ghana to find out what's the real legacy of London 2012 for a country like this. When you have a disability, life can feel like a race for equality. Is that race being won here? Ghana sent their biggest team ever to compete in London. Just 4 athletes. They hoped 2012 would be their year, but for an outbreak of chickenpox in their final training camp, it could have been. Almost a year on, I'm here to find all 4 and find out whether their presence at the 2012 Games has had any impact. Each member of the 2012 team has experienced prejudice to some degree, none more so than Ghana's sole representative in the powerlifting event. If a doctor had his way, he wouldn't even be here.
I'm Charles Nate, a Ghanaian from Eastern Region, and I'm a manager of Pepe's Health Center. When I was born, 1 week old, in Ghana, we normally have what we call the outdooring, where you be named. And then during the outdooring, my parents said I was dressed up and I started crying. So they took off the socks that they've put in on my legs. And then they realized that as soon as they took off the socks, the whole legs was black in color. 2 weeks to 3 weeks, it started dropping off. Like everything, like rotting and dropping off. So they did the amputation of the 2 legs. And then within a month of 2, the doctor came back to my daddy and said, I'm wondering how you're going to take care of this baby without the 2 legs. So if you could, then why don't we give him some injection, he go to sleep, and that's it. And then my parents refused it. They said, no, we are not buying that. We'll still take care of him. If he survives, fine. If he doesn't, fine, that's nature. But we still stand by our ways. We are not going to do that. So thank God my parents didn't really give up. And then here I am today.
Talk to me a little bit about your childhood and your relationships with not only your siblings, but also with your schoolmates.
In school, I was the only one putting on trousers. Most of the times in Ghana, all the schools we put on shorts. That's the main. I was the only person putting on trousers. Why? Because people don't really know what prosthetic legs are, and when they see, they become afraid. And then in Africa, there is this belief that when you get closer to somebody with disability, it's easy to be transferable. So even in the classroom, then the one I was sitting with on the same desk doesn't want to. So then I have to be taken to the back of the classroom. So I was alone at the back of the classroom because nobody wants to come closer. They think they might get the same problem or get a disease or whatever.
Did you feel like an outcast, or did you feel like you were lonely, I guess, at any point in your childhood because you didn't really have friends to play with? All you had was your siblings.
Yeah, really. I really, really felt that. And then sometimes I sit in the classroom and then I cry. And then that is where I start asking my dad, when am I going to get my legs back? And then he was like, when you grew up, it will come. You know, so I really felt it like I'm lonely and why me? Sometimes I ask myself, why me?
Charles wondered, why am I being treated like this? Max Varden is the executive secretary of the National Council on Persons with Disability. No one I met explained the problem better.
The percentage of the population in this country that has a disability is estimated to be about 20%. However, the major challenge we face in this country is not with the 20%, so much as with the 80% of the population who are nominally without disability. Reason is that it is this 80% who make the resource allocation decisions, who make the hiring and firing decisions that impact so strongly on the disability community. In Ghana, as in many African countries, we have a belief that disability has very negative connotations. We associate disability with the devil, with evil, with witchcraft, with Satan, with misfortune, with curses and what have you. And so because of these beliefs, people treat children with disability with a lot of negativity. And you may have heard that there have been practices in the past where children have been abandoned to die, or they've been actively killed, and so on. What we are seeking to do is to engage in a belief change program. One of the things that I discovered when I first got involved in disability and I did some research into the origins of disability, something like 55% of all human conceptions abort spontaneously. Now, that to me was very significant. I have an engineering, scientific engineering background, and 55% was totally unexpected. But it told me two things. One, that creation has a quality control program in place. So if the human embryo does not match the template requirement of the human spirit, it is discarded. The second thing it told me, a corollary of this first fact, is that therefore every one of us, 45%, who have made it down that birth canal has been endorsed by creation. And if God says yes, who are we to say no?
Such a simple idea. I hope it works. The four athletes who went to London know that their public profile can play a huge part in that process. Paracyclist Alan Mumuni says they need to maintain a visible presence in Ghanaian society.
It was amazing being the first Ghanaian cyclist, be it able or disabled, to have ever qualified and participated in a Paralympic Games or Olympic Games.
Tell me how your life has changed since you've come back from London.
My life has changed massively. Now a lot of people appreciate the fact that I'm raising the flag of the country so high. People, organizations, you walk into an office for sponsorship and they don't hesitate to grant you. And people who are having children with disabilities do approach you for more advice and then counseling and something that will encourage their relatives who are in physical or suffering from physical disabilities. And that is the amazing thing.
The alternative to what Alam describes is obvious. Every time our car stops at the traffic lights. Still, it's depressing to hear Charles put it into words.
Obviously, I'll be begging in the street like my other colleagues are doing now. That would be the next alternative that I have to take. That's begging in the street for money to for upkeeping and like for living. Yeah, if not being Paralympics.
Life changed for Charles when he attended a tryout day for Paralympic sport. He found he had a talent for powerlifting, and someone there also introduced him to a gym owner who offered him a job and then promoted him to the post of manager. She now helps to fund him as an elite athlete. But who should pay for what these Paralympians need? The four who represented their country at London 2012 don't receive a salary or an allowance from their National Paralympic Committee. The government funds all sport in Ghana, and football historically has taken the lion's share. There's been some money to get these athletes to Paralympic qualifying events, but I get the impression that funding is limited. Ghana's Sports Authority is actively seeking more private investment. All three of the men who went to London have found their own benefactors, the people who employ them. I understand that the only woman on the team, Anita Forjor, is in a less secure position.
We've had a long car journey. I think we've been in a car for about 3-4 hours or so. Left at the crack of dawn this morning, or actually before the dawn, about 3 a.m. And we finally arrived here, just put my leg on, getting out the car, and we're here to see Anita, to see her in her training environment, to see where she lives, and I guess to see some of her teammates and how she gets along and see what she had to go through in terms of training for London. Well, I do see a group of wheelchair athletes quite a few of them, actually. Gosh, there's got to be about five or six of them out here on the track, along with plenty of ambulatory athletes. Huge stadium, again, in the middle of nowhere, almost as if you put a castle in the middle of a jungle, almost. Very Ghanaian feel to it, I guess. There, I guess there are no sky boxes as I'm used to seeing in more luxurious stadiums, but very interesting scenario. Very, very interesting scenario. Let's see, here comes, around the bend comes a bunch of wheelchair athletes, four of them. Some appear to be sprinting, others, I'm gonna call it jogging.
There you.
Okay. How you doing, Anita?
Fine, thank you.
Nice to meet you also. Are you done training?
Yeah.
Yes, you're done?
Anita feels overlooked, forgotten. She won a bronze medal at the Commonwealth Games in 2010, but tells me she has never received the bonus payment she'd been expecting.
Oh, me imagine is Ghana ngasano Paralympic timuno.
If it were Olympians, able-bodied athletes, would they do the same thing to them? Personally, I cried so bitterly because to promise someone and just slash it like that, it's unfair. The authorities just don't care about Paralympians in this country. They don't. And I was so demoralized, I wanted to quit. But thinking about it, we have to fight for the younger ones. If we quit, what will the younger ones do? If we take the country, for example, people fought to get independence for the country. They fought with their blood, and others are enjoying it now. So we need to fight for the younger generation to enjoy. That's the reason I'm still here.
How can you better help those competitors of yours or those teammates of yours so that they can also be able to fund their not only their competitions, but maybe also to be able to assist their families?
It's true that the national authorities don't help us. The International Paralympic Committee does not help us financially. So Ajara and I have taken the initiative to bring together certain individuals, well-to-do individuals in this town, to bring them together to act as patrons and sponsors for us, so that in the long run, we find an alternative source of funding for our activities. When I look at myself, I have two kids. So when I go for games, even if you go for games and you don't win a medal, you don't get the money. So when you go for games and win a medal, that's when I keep some money for me to take care of my kids and my other obligations. And then I bring some here. But that can't sustain anyone. It's just peanuts. So this initiative from me and Ajara to get some well-to-do individuals, we've got some, but we're still working on some to get a core group of people who will support us and our activities. Because these days, if I even go out onto the streets to talk to these disabled beggars and tell them to stop begging and come for sports, some of them look at me and say, even you, you've made your name, but you've got nothing. So if I leave the streets and come to sports, what will I make? So it's difficult, but it's an initiative we have taken and we hope it will bear fruits.
So can the government afford to give more? Elections took place post-London 2012. The new Minister for Youth and Sport, Elvis Afrié Ankara, says things are going to change, with a commitment to put Paralympic sport on the same funding as football.
To show how serious attention government pays to disability sports, disability sports is under Category A, which means that it's one of the sports that should get a lot of funding, more funding than those in other categories. And of course, in terms of promotion and government giving it priority attention.
What are some of your goals as it relates to Paralympic sports so that it can continue to have that type of funding and support from Ghana?
There are many ways of looking at it. Yes, Ghanaians love football, but Ghanaians love sports. And any sport that the athletes show discipline, they show commitment, dedication, there's attraction. And we've seen that in the Paralympic sports. So it's beginning to attract. Now, of course, there's a limit to what government can do. But what government can do is to also facilitate the private sector. That is where we're heading to. Sport is a very important rallying tool, I'm sure, across the world, and particularly in Ghana. We're very passionate about sport. And so that is why we want to pay much more attention to disability sports and use that as a rallying point.
Do you have a particular timeline for some of these, I guess, policies or procedures that you envision happening?
Yesterday.
The minister spoke with a great deal of passion and says he can help stop requests for funding getting caught in bottlenecks. But back in Kumasi, Anita is skeptical when I tell her she can expect to be treated like a footballer playing for the national team.
Football, Ombe Campo in Ghana.
There is no way Paralympic sports can be up there with football. It doesn't happen. Just imagine, when the senior soccer team is about to play football in this country, they are in camp for a long time, and they even pay them in dollars. Ask the Paralympic teams, the best you get is 100 cedis, which is $55, and even it does not come. When you protest, they tell you they are helping you. So it's never true that Paralympic sports is up there with the senior national team. It doesn't happen anywhere. The football team, when they are about to play matches, the media is so interested. There's so much attention. There's daily allowances. There's the best hotels. Everything. They get all the best facilities. The Paralympic team, it does not happen. There's a very, very, very long way between football and Paralympics. Can you imagine a sports minister or an official telling a football player, we are doing you a favor? He tells us that. Assuming Asamoah is the star of the team, Mike Lacian is the star of the football team, I'm also the star of the Paralympic team because where they've been, I've also been. But it's a long way between football and Paralympics.
Anita's frustration is clear. There's a long way between football and Paralympic sport in Ghana. The minister told me he wants to close that gap. And another of the 2012 Paralympians now works with an organization that's intent on bringing promising footballers and Paralympians together.
Get a ball, Perry.
We've come out here to the Right to Dream Academy. It's amazing. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and it's almost like a haven out in the middle of nowhere. There's plenty of fields around. I even saw some goats on the way in. The road is not the greatest paved, but I guess in the end, it's paved to people's dreams and to this, I want to call haven out in the middle of nowhere. I want to call them dirtish / cobblestone-ish roads and plenty of trees. But the fact that I think I see plenty of well-cultured grass here on this actual campus and plenty of signs of inspiration around. So hopefully we'll be able to get around and read a bunch of the signs to encourage the youth that come here every day. But I'm intrigued by the plenty of goats I also see around.
Rafael Bacho Nkegwe has been part of Ghana's team for all three of their appearances at the Paralympic Games. Each time, he's been his country's flag bearer at the opening ceremonies. Rafael now works full-time with the not-for-profit Right to Dream Football Academy. They worked in partnership with Ghana's Paralympic Committee to help get all four athletes to London 2012. The academy wanted to create role models because they're expanding their remit. Rafael is helping them to find tomorrow's Paralympic stars.
It was my long-term dream that I need to give back to the young ones after I finish sport, because it's going to be shame to me as a rifle being an athlete after you decide to hang your chair and there won't be anybody to be there. So I was always looking for opportunities to say, okay, I can also give back. Even though I can still be an athlete, but I decided to set this 1 year aside to focus on the para sports project that Right to Dream want to put in place to make sure 2016 we have a large contingent going. Even 2012 was the first time Ghana is sending a large contingent, because the twice that we have been is only two athletes. 2012 was four. In 2016, we need to build on. And to build on, people, somebody needs to sacrifice. I don't need to be up there trying to do it, but I need to be somewhere trying to inspire, trying to create opportunity, trying to get a lot of people involved.
What would you consider to be the, I guess, one of the best things and one of the worst things about having a disability here in Ghana and as well as in the world?
For me, one of the best things is my disability has made me get to where even if I have leg, I won't be there. I can't predict my future, but looking at my disability, where it has taken me to, apart from President of Ghana, who can be in White House, but I've been in White House in 2003. That's where my disability has took me. I've been in so many places in this world because of my disability. The sad moment is the moment that my nation, Ghana, is still doesn't come to his sense. That disabled people in this country, given equal opportunity, can do higher things. That is a sad aspect of me, of how people are still in the dark.
The pace of change concerns me here in Ghana. When are all of these plans going to happen? The minister told me yesterday. Right to Dream have a timescale. They hope to have their first intake of potential Paralympians by the end of the year, with some of them making the team for Rio 2016. But what about the Ghanaian Paralympic Committee?
I'm Reverend Cornelius Ajakofi, the president for the National Paralympic Committee.
What would you like for your budget to be? If you were running an ideal program here, how much do you believe it would take for an athlete to train each year and for your entire program to operate effectively?
The program kitty for an athlete, at least per athlete, about 100,000 USD, then perhaps the whole budget should run into not less than maybe $2 million.
And how close or how far are you away from that ideal situation?
We are quite far, but there's still hope. You see, you're talking in terms of the whole country economy. You can't talk in isolation.
Fast forward to Rio in 2016. How many athletes do you anticipate walking into that stadium to represent this country?
We are looking at about four sporting disciplines: athletics, cycling, powerlifting, and basketball. That at least we want to add, because every year or every term of the Olympics, we try to add one sport. So the last time we went with cycling and powerlifting. 2016, we want to add a team sport, that is basketball team. Minus the team sport, I'm looking at between 6 and 7.
There is ambition here, even if the forecast for growing the size of the team strikes me as a little conservative. Small steps are still steps, and there's clearly great pride in what Ghana has achieved since making their Paralympic debut 9 years ago. This is never more evident than when it's pointed out to me that the country's sports writers voted a female wheelchair racer Ghana's Athlete of the Year in June of 2012, ahead of any of the country's footballers. But it's also the case that Ajara Muhammad, the winner, didn't qualify for London 2012. Max Varden at the National Council on Persons with Disability gave me a perspective on the historical prejudice against people with disabilities in Ghana. What does he think that first Paralympic medal would mean to the cause of disabled people in this country?
That question brings to mind a certain speech by one Dr. Martin Luther King. He expressed a dream, and it took maybe a couple of generations for that dream to be, well, it's not entirely fulfilled, but symbolically, we've got there. And I'd imagine that it will be a momentous occasion for all of Ghana, for us to get there. I have that dream.
I believe here in this culture, one thing that separates them may be education, and another thing may be empowerment. So if you come saying to yourself that I want to help, because that's the conversation I've had with myself almost since I've been here, you know, how can I help? Where can I help? And it, to me, it's so much more about teaching someone to fish versus, you know, giving them some fish. So the people here have, some people may view it as an entrepreneurial spirit because they're out, you know, standing on the corners and selling all this stuff. But are they being entrepreneurs or are they surviving? And it's disheartening to know that every day your idea is, I just want to get up and I want to survive the day versus I want to conquer the day. So hopefully over time they can learn the conquer attitude versus the survival attitude. I would sure hope that, you know, they don't just say, okay, we had four athletes that went to London, let's take five to Rio. Instead, they would say, we had one woman, let's find several more women because we have years, you know, 4 years in between these games to do so. But whatever Ghanaian team puts on that uniform and walks into that stadium in Rio, it's my greatest hope that I'll be there cheering alongside of them as if they had a USA uniform on. So make your own story.